من المؤمنات رحم الله من قرأ سورة المباركة الفاتحة. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع ذنوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد صلى الله عليه وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم وغاصبي حقوقهم ومنكري فضائلهم من ليلنا هذا إلى قيام يوم الدين. Last week the Rabbas Jafar started on a series of issues related to Hajj. And next week he continues. Today he takes a break, allowing me to continue. So I will just briefly, based on my own experience, as well as the reality that goes on. Whilst it is true that times have changed, and long ago people used to have hardships in the journey itself getting to Mecca and Medina, today we don't have that hardship. And so it is supposed to afford us an opportunity to concentrate more on our spiritual aspect of Hajj. But the reality is very different. The reality, I believe, based on my experience, is that now the hardships have taken a different form. Long ago, it used to be the traveling journey itself which was hard. Today, the procedures and administrative issues of passport and tickets and arranging for transport and buses and all that has become so complicated that I guarantee you, if you were to go alone, not in a part of a group, you will find that 95% of your time in Hajj is spent only arranging for transfer from one place to another. Now, why is it that the Saudi authorities have done that, that they take your passport away as you enter Medina, and then you have to go collect it back before you go to Mecca, and as you enter Mecca, they take your passport away again, and before you go back to Jeddah, they give you your passport again, and that even they don't hand it over to you, they hand it over to the bus driver who will drop you at the airport, and so on. I mean, things that you really don't want to know, because if you really know what is happening, you might think, what is this? Right? That is why the culture has changed. The culture from where individually we could decide and say, alright, we want to go to Hajj. Today the culture is that we have to go as part of a group of organizers who will look after all these issues so that we as Hujjaj have the time to concentrate on the spiritual aspect of Hajj. So the hardships are there. Perhaps you as Hajjis, when you go to Hajj this year, those of you who are going, those of you who haven't been to Hajj, may Allah make it possible for us to go to Hajj next year, inshallah. But when you go to Hajj, the organizers are there with a mission. They want to take away the mundane tasks of arranging and looking after your passport and reconfirmation of your tickets and so on. They want you to concentrate on your spirituality. And this is something that we as members of a larger group have to acknowledge. Now when we go there, this is not a packet trip, you know, a package offered that this is what you will get. And suddenly you go there and say, why don't I have this and why don't I have this? As part of an organization team for several years now, I can assure you that every Hajj is a different Hajj, number one. And number two, we are as much in doubts or in mystery as much as all the rest of the Hajjaj. Because they change laws, they change regulations. Traffic control, you don't know tomorrow your bus will get there or not. Because if the police want, they will come and put a block and divert all cars away. We are not in control. We are going to a land where nobody is in control. All these things that I am saying requires that patience and tolerance. It requires an understanding from now, a preparation from now, that you are going there, you will seal your mouth, please. You will seal your lips. Because there will be a lot of inconveniences, especially coming from a part of the world where we are used to everything going like clockwork, huh? You book a car to come pick you up at 8 o'clock, and if that guy is not there by 8:15, you're going to wait for him? You're going to book another car and get going. But it won't work there. So you'll come up to the organizer, this bus is still not here, it's 1 hour, why don't you get another bus and go? It doesn't work like that. So that patience and tolerance is something that we have to go with from here. The patience and tolerance, because we are going into a strange land. We don't speak the language. We are not in control of the circumstances of what we want. Right? And then the patience and tolerance comes because you are with a group of people who are equally frustrated like you, who are equally tired like you. And everybody's tempers are very short. You know, the fuses are about to blow. And you can actually gauge, as an organizer I tell you, you can actually gauge the different levels of tolerance of people are. And you can know that this person has a very short temper. This person gives up very easily. This person cannot tolerate inconveniences and hardships. This I thought just as an introduction, because I think this is very important for those of us who are going to Hajj. Coming to the spiritual part of it, Hajj itself has two dimensions. It has a social dimension and it has a spiritual dimension. And we're talking of the rituals, the rites that we will perform in Hajj. The social dimension is by the virtue of the fact that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has ordained certain acts to be performed in one place at the same time by everybody. So it's like you have balloting here, right? If you can imagine that, let's say the whole of Harrow only, right? We're not going outside Harrow. If all of the Harrow had only a certain time, say from 8 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, if all of them were to be able to do that only in one place, say Wembley Stadium, big place, Wembley Stadium. Only that place. You cannot vote anywhere else. No other ballot stations like we have, you know, every 500 feet you have another ballot station. No. Forget that. If you were to imagine a scenario where on an election day, people of Harrow, 2 million people, were eligible to vote, and they would get together from 8 to 4 p.m. one day at the same time, in one place only. Can you imagine the kind of chaos that would take place? Ask the organizer, they'll tell you. They would say it is a logistical nightmare. Now, because of that, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is testing us here. That how far will you go to maintain your interpersonal skills, you know, your relations. You are not only with your immediate family members, no. You are not only with your neighbors, no. You are not only with your community members, no. You are with perhaps African from a village in Nigeria. or an Arab from a Berber from North Africa, or from somebody from Indonesia, and you will see these people, you will see them in large numbers, and you will see them in tawaf, with their elbows pushing you, because they are in a hurry. And the level of, civilization or civilized behavior is so different amongst all the people that are there in Hajj, that are there inside in Masjid al-Haram performing the same action of tawaf. You will see they are so different that you will feel, my God, where am I? Now that social dimension is a check to your own individual level. Because you see what will happen. As you are performing tawaf, right? You get, and this is a trend. I mean, I speak without any kind of derogatory remarks, please. I may mention, certain facts. I do not wish to stereotype any behavior. But let us say, as you do tawaf, you find some Indonesians coming fast and weaving through all the crowd, yeah? Or you find certain Shias, Bahrainis or Lebanese, they have women performing Hajj. So what they do is they cordon, they form a cordon of male members who are so powerful and so strong, right? So that their women are inside that cordon group and nobody should touch them. But in the process, what they do is they don't care about the rest who are also performing tawaf. Or you will get, for example, again Shias, Iranis, for example, who want to perform the two rak'at prayers after tawaf right next to Maqam Ibrahim. So what they will do is they will again form a cordon, stand next to Maqam Ibrahim. Baba, there are people who are doing tawaf. You are disturbing them. The rule says, you cannot disturb somebody who is performing tawaf. If you don't get a spot next to Maqam Ibrahim, then go back. The closest spot available, recite there. As long as you do not disturb people who are performing tawaf. Now we will be attracted, there is space here. Because the Iranis are blocked. Right? And you will find that it will be very easy to get inside there and stay there, recite two rakat prayers and get out. But you don't know how much difficulty the others are facing by having to go across this group. All these, and believe me, what will happen, the first thing that will come to your mind, if you are performing your tawaf alone, you want to concentrate on tawaf. You want to concentrate on the fact that you are next to the house of your Lord. You want to ask for whatever you want. You want to talk to your Lord that I have come, I am doing something that I don't understand the wisdom of, but because you have told me to do it, I am doing it. Going round a stone cube 7 times. Because you want me to do it, I am doing it, oh Lord. Here I am. Whilst you want to concentrate, you will not get the time to concentrate. You will not get the peace to concentrate. Why? Somebody is pushing you, somebody is shouting, somebody is cutting across. And you know what will happen? I'll tell you what will happen. You will feel, these Pakistanis, they don't know how to do this. These Iranis, right? You will actually feel them. These Nigerians, these Turkish, you will suddenly level them by their nationality, and that itself is undermining the status of another Muslim brother. However difficult it is, you will feel that you are superior in your behavior because you are quiet. You will feel that you have been wronged and that all of those are the wrongdoers. You will think that if only they were as smart as you or as civilized as you, they would not be doing this. And that feeling inside you is what we are supposed to check and counter-check. Itself Forget the act of tawaf that is wajib and part of mustahab acts. Forget that act of tawaf itself, which has its own sawabs, right? These small things that come up as you do tawaf are part of a larger test that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is testing us. How else can we become a better person? Just by going around the Kaaba? No. So the social dimension is there actually to be able to learn how to interact with other people who may be either more educated or less educated, who may be stronger physically, weaker physically, who may be not speaking the language, who may not understand practices and virtues the way we understand it. In other words, how to behave and interact with people who come from the same religion, who come for the same goal, but are very different in their mentality, in their attitude, in their approach. Here it is easy. You don't click with someone, you don't want to know him. Here you can pick and choose. Because you have all the time, you have the freedom. There, you are part of a larger group that is there for the same time, for the same action, and you have no choice but to live in them, with them. So that kind of inner check that a person, a haji, is supposed to be aware of is based on social interaction. Then we come. Of course, there is so much to Hajj. You know, time itself does not permit me. I mean, one or two sessions or even three sessions is not enough to point out these small issues where Shaitan will rear its head. Shaitan will test us, test our spiritualities, test our forbearance. But when you come to spirituality, let us try and understand what is the wisdom behind all these acts. You see, Hajj itself, forget Umrah. Umrah is going around Tawaf and Safa, Marwa and all that. But Hajj itself is 4 days. The day of Arafat, 9th of Zilhajj, Eid, 10th of Zilhajj in Mina, 11th of Zilhajj in Mina, and 12th of Zilhajj, half day in Mina. These 3.5 days are the actual Hajj performance. Doctor Ali Shariati, in his book Hajj, for those of you who have read it, it is a very interesting book because he presents a theory which is quite intriguing. You know, he says that imagine when people leave Makkah. Now everybody, there is nobody in Medina now. Anybody who wants to perform Hajj by 8th of Zilhajj is in Makkah. Because 9th of Zilhajj they have to be in Arafat. In fact, there are people who come into Makkah on the 9th of Zilhajj. People who want to perform Hajj have to start from Makkah. They can't start from, let's say, Jeddah and go straight to Arafat. It doesn't work. It has to be from Makkah. The ihram for Hajj has to be worn in Makkah. Right? So all those who are going for Hajj are already in Makkah. Number one, they don that 2 pieces of clothes, white clothes, that Dr. Ali Shariti says is symbolic of a shroud that a dead person is wearing. Right? Then there is what is called going to Arafat. Now in Arafat, Arafat is a huge plain. See desert. You will see there are no, I mean, they have now, for logistic reasons, they have put roads and lights and sprinklers and toilets and everything, right? But there are no permanent structures like buildings or hotels or restaurants. No. These things are not there. It is just a plain desert. Now, in Arafat, 2.5 million people get together at the same time from Zohar of 9th Zilhajj of to Maghrib of 9th Zilhajj. Everybody is there. All dressed in white. And if it reminds you, it is supposed to remind you of the Day of Judgment, nothing else. When people are resurrected after death, And every one of them is in their shrouds. And everyone is together. And everyone is running around not knowing where to go and what to do. If you look at Arafat, this is what we are supposed to remember. That this is how the day of judgment, the day of resurrection is going to look like. And from there on, as we move to Mahshar, that is Muzdalifa, right? That is how we will move on the day of judgment from one station to another. And from Muzdalifa, Mahshar, we go to Mina. That is from second station to third station. That is how on the day of judgment, where people will be asked to move from one station, they will be resurrected all at one time. And then from there, they will move from one station to another. Dr. Ali Shariati says that imagine, when we don on the ihram, 27 things become haram. And I'm sure those of you who are going to Hajj have studied this thoroughly. What is haram and what is halal? What you are not allowed? You can't even swat a fly that is on your head. You cannot look at the mirror. You cannot put perfume. You cannot turn away from foul smell. All these things are haram when you are in the state of ihram, right? You are as good as a dead person walking alive. 27 things that are normally halal become haram on you, and these 27 things become haram on you such that you are like a dead person walking. Now, it is these things that we have to realize whilst we are in the state of ihram. What happens is because we are overwhelmed by the numbers, we are overwhelmed by the logistics. We have to make sure we are in the bus in time. We have to make sure we are inside the tent. We have to make sure we don't get lost. We follow the leader. Because the 2 million people, you just make one wrong turn and you're gone for days. So we make sure we are with our group. We keep up with our group. And you keep up with the group. Now, because of that focus, we don't even realize spiritually why are these things haram on us. What is it that Allah wants us from us by making these things haram? Remind you, foul smell, because you know, I know you can't turn away from foul smell, because when you go to Mina, you go to Arafat, there are public toilets there. And between Arafat and Mina, when you go to Muzdalifa, where it is wajib to stay from Fajr to sunrise on the day of Eid. Now, that particular time, in Muzdalifa, they started with some concrete toilets, but with the number of people and given the time, first of all, it is early morning time. Secondly, we are going during winter time, where it is a bit cold out there, right? And thirdly, it is a time where everybody wants to go to the washroom. Everybody. Right? Now, the toilets that are there are not enough. So what happens is that people go behind the mountains to relieve themselves. Not only first job, but even the second job. And that is why you are advised that you have a torch to make sure that you don't step on things that will make you najisa. Now, all these things are hardships. And I know right now, as I think, you know, many people will be thinking, oh man, I won't drink water, I won't eat food, you know, I'll make sure I control myself. Believe me, I tell you, you control yourself as much as you want. When nature makes a call, is there any control? There is no control. So, these are the things that will divert your attention from the spirituality of being in, say, Muzdalifa. Muzdalifa is called Mahshar, right? Mahshar is place of congregation, where everybody gets together again. It's like, you know, you move from Muzdalifa, get together here like an army, then move on to Mina. And you have that window of a time where everybody has to be in Muzdalifa, right? So they get together, they pray their morning prayers there, they pick up the pebbles. It's like you're arming yourself to attack Shaitan. See, this picking up of pebbles itself is a ritual that is considered to be spiritual. And we make it like a physical rite of picking up pebbles and say, this size is proper. Okay, do I have to look for a bigger pebble? I can't find any pebbles here. Where do I go look for pebbles? Help me look for pebbles. And so the concentration is changed from the spiritual aspect of picking up the pebbles, which are, missiles for Shaitan that you're going to hit, into a physical act of just collecting pebbles, putting them in the bag, 70 pebbles ready, tie a bag, hey, I'm finished, I'm done. There is no race against time. Just because you have finished does not make you any smarter or any one step closer to God. What is important is that as you pick up the pebbles, the frame of mind has to be in constant concentration. That I am doing this for the sake of Allah. For He has ordered me to hit those pillars of Shaitan. And these are the pebbles that I will be doing that. These pebbles will assist me to discharge my duty and responsibility of hitting them. You will see that when people are, there has been a change in the pillar of Iblis. Last year was the first year. Before then it was just one big pillar. 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet. Right? That was this. 2.5 feet is this big, yeah? By 2.5 feet. That was the square pillar that was known as the Iblis. The first, the second and the third. And we had to hit the first, the second and the third. Based on which day, of course. On the Eid day, you only hit the third and the largest. On 11th and 12th, you hit all three. Right? I'm not going into masails of Hajj. 2 million people. And believe me, what we have seen, you ask people who have been to Hajj, we see a crowd, how do I describe it? If I put it crudely, a crazy crowd. Right? Because they come with anger for whatever reason. Some people want to show, they hit 7 pebbles and then that's not enough. So they pick up slippers, they have their umbrellas, they have their bottles of water, they have their... And they just hit. But by hitting this, you're not hitting Iblis. You think by hitting that pillar of stone, an umbrella, or even a bottle of water or a big rock, you think Iblis is going to cry out? That's where that synchrony is not there. Where spirituality, understanding why we are doing it, for what reason we are doing it, what is the objective of doing this. Now what has happened is that from 2.5 feet, it has grown to 22.5 feet. In fact, 25 feet is 10 times bigger, right? Why? Because now the crowd can hit him from far, and they have done a beautiful system where anything that you hit doesn't reflect back. It goes down and underground there is a storage and recycling of stones and all that. They have spent millions to do that. But it has reduced congestion. It has reduced the injuries that were taking place. Because with that small 2.5, and somebody decides from 100 feet away to throw a big stone and he misses and it goes past the pillar. You know what happens? It hits the head of another one who is standing there, innocent guy. And you will see people actually running and as if, jununi, crazy people, just trying to hit. Why? Because they missed that point. That in fact, if you read certain hadiths, you will find that in first and second Shaitan, when you hit, you're supposed to hit it like this. Supposed to hit it like that. Not even like that. Right? You hit it like that, but it's difficult. Logistically, it's very difficult. Because you can't be that close to do it like this. Right? However, the only reason why we're supposed to understand, why do the Imam say you hit it like that? Because the important point is not with how big a pebble you hit the pillar or how hard you hit the pillar. The important thing is to be in the frame of mind that what I am doing is what Nabi Ibrahim alayhi salam did. And what did Nabi Ibrahim do? Nabi Ibrahim turned away Iblis. When Iblis came to him, Nabi Ibrahim threw pebbles at Iblis, turning him away. Right? Not injuring Iblis. All he wanted was, you get away from my sight. Now, there is no Iblis in front of us to say we want to do the same thing. The Iblis is residing inside our hearts. He's inside us. So when we hit that pebble, all we have to do is we have to concentrate. Oh Allah, with this I seek your help to get rid of that shaitan that is inside me. That's all. Because it is prayers to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala at that time that are answered and that will help us. Well, as we talk of Hajj, the one thing that you want to remember as you go to these places, especially when you go to Umrah, is the fact that it was the 8th of Zilhajj when Imam Hussein al-Islam decided to cut short his Hajj and move away. It was, he was in Mecca up to the 8th of Zilhajj with the intention to perform Hajj. But on the 8th of Zilhajj, he decided that no, the army of Yazid, people of Yazid had decided to kill him, even if they found him inside Masjid al-Haram. So to protect the sanctity of the mosque, Imam Hussein al-Islam decided to move away. He cut short, he converted his Hajj, intention of Hajj, his Umrah Tamattu into Umrah Mufrida, and left Mecca. But before he left Mecca, he stood up in front of people, and he said, you know who I am? I am the son of the Holy Prophet in whose house the Quran was revealed. I am the son of Ali and Fatima, and I am Hussein. You know who Yazid is? Yazid is the son of Muawiyah, son of Abu Sufyan. Yazid does these things. Yazid is the one who drinks. Yazid is the one who gambles. Yazid is the one who has no respect for Masjid al-Haram, that he is ready to spill my blood even in this mosque. Now, people like me, mithli la yubaya' mithla. People like me will never give allegiance to people like him. Thus showing very clearly that this was not a battle between Hussein and Yazid, but it was a battle between people like Hussein who followed Hussein and people like Yazid who followed Yazid. Ala al-anatullahi ala al-qawm al-zalimeen. Say'alamu al-ladhina zalamu ayyamun qalabihin qalibu. إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون. إلى أرواح المؤمنين والمؤمنات رحم الله من قرأ سورة المباركة الفاتحة.